Hi, and welcome to the Ox Unplugged. Today we're talking about Rant by Chuck. Oh no, I've never actually said his last name. Palahniuk? Palahniuk? I am Mr. Jaywit. I'm sorry.
And I am Ginger Bitters, Grognard Elder Goth, relatively new Oxian, and glad to be here.
And I'm Halion, and I'm also here.
So, okay. This is a full spoiler cast of, we're talking about Rant, because we need to get it out of our system.
Oh God, if we could only get it out of our systems.
Well, there are booster shots for it, right?
I was just about to say, get your shots.
Yeah, you mean like the shots that you need for rabies?
Yeah. So, okay.
Yes.
I think we need to start this off by just going through what I consider the three phases of Rant. There are three different sections.
Only three?
Yes.
Only three.
Yeah.
No, he's right. There's three general sections.
Yeah. So we have the Rant as a kid, Rant as an adult, and then Rant as a historian. I think those are the three breakups that I would put there.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, so you have the Middletown, the city that I don't think is named, and then whatever the fuck happens in the
third. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, then there's the everything else. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
So, okay. I don't want to just go through the book by itself, but does anyone have any thoughts on the Middleton town when we discover that Rant is, the people who haven't read it, good job. But it is...
You're welcome.
Yes. So, Rant starts off with talking about Rant.
Rant Casey.
Rant Casey. Rant Buster, according to his dad, and something else according to his mom.
Buddy.
Buddy, right. So, the interesting thing about this is it is a self-declared... What's the technical term for it?
An oral history.
An oral history, right. Where you have different conversations with different people that are sort of meshing together. So you'll get like a paragraph from one person, then it'll switch perspectives to someone else, then it switches perspective to someone else. So it's normally about like three or so people per chapter. And they're all talking about vaguely the same thing and just reinforcing the same ideas over and over and over again.
But you don't technically, again, spoilers.
We have to accept spoilers.
Okay, everything in this is spoilers. Else. But it's essentially from the beginning of the book, they lay it out there that the subject of the book is, you know, Buster Rant Casey. He is deceased.
Yes.
He is no longer alive and with us. And this is everyone talking about their recollections of, or their research of, or what they have been able to learn about.
He was a popular boy.
Yeah, about Rant Casey.
Infamous.
It's, you know, one or the other, tomato, tomato. But we never hear anything directly from him. It's all everyone else's perspective and recollections. And although there are things that people say Rant said, or Rant would say, or Rant told me, Rant himself is never directly...
But yes. Never heard.
Correct.
Right. So this is a book chock full of what we literary folks like to call unreliable narrators.
Exactly. And that had that exact thought today was realizing, thinking back on it, is we don't know what the actual true story is because we're all getting different lenses of what other people's perspectives are and what their beliefs are.
Correct.
And all of their inherent biases because of it.
Right. And also, too, in the beginning, it lays out the plot right away.
My favorite is the car salesman who just jabbers for pages and pages about just inane nonsense of like, oh, this is how. And he like sat next to Buster Rant's dad in an airplane.
Yeah.
And he's like, I know. Yeah.
So. No author put something in a book for no reason.
No. I'm not saying that it was I am saying that that character's speech was inane, but it was there for a reason.
See, now I didn't find it inane. He was setting us up to be sold something. He's describing how you make a good sale and telling us we're about to be sold something.
Yes.
That's what all that was about.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
So something Haleon didn't hear and Jay Witt heard while you were gone is, I have an English degree.
I speak English, allegedly.
No, and I don't mean that as a brag. I just mean that as I've come to this with tools specifically meant for getting these sort of things out of a book.
Yeah. That's all. And I'm just going, man, this guy fucking talks a lot. Because everyone else is just little bits, but he has a giant long thing, and it's just like, oh, okay, he's just real chatting.
Meanwhile, okay, I'm reading sections of the book, that, and then like half a chapter, and then having to put it down and text Jay, like, what the fuck are you? Did you have me read?
You asked for the weirdest thing I had,
and this and you delivered.
Yep. Yes, and you read this book in public.
If you want weird, I can give you a list.
No, I've learned my lesson. I think Jay described Rant best. I've heard it. The best description is it's one of the best. Why the fuck did you suggest I read this? And thank you books.
Yeah. Just for fun, I'll send you a list. I don't want to sidetrack the conversation any more than I can right now.
Okay.
Okay. So, we start off with Rant discovering spider bites, animal venom, and that sort of links him. We don't know when Rant gets rabies, but he does get it frequently.
Well, okay, to be fair, he figures out
that spiders give him a boner.
That's spiders and ants, getting bit by insects gives him a boner. At that very tender age, you know, where all young boys are experimenting with arachno erections, right?
don't put me into your camp.
Okay. I mean, everyone, we're not here to Haleon, but
everyone but Jay Witt.
Yes.
But
I am a dainty northerner, thank you.
But it doesn't stop there. Like he goes out of his way to explore out in the woods, out in the desert, what have
you. He brings people along.
Yeah, so his whole thing is he's going to stick his arm in any hole, log, knot hole, whatever he can find, with the hopes of either grabbing a critter or it grabbing him. And that's his whole point. That is the purpose of he's going out to do it. It's almost like he is intentionally trying to inoculate himself against everything by just being bit by every critter and varmint out there.
So I had a thought about that, and only because I'm a nerd, is it almost sounds like, I mean, there's the boner part, right? But there's also the whole superhero origin story.
It kind of does have that, a little bit of that feeling.
You get bit by something, or you go through all these very punishing experiences, and you come out of it as a superhero.
Oh my God, Jay, this could be the origins of Scatman. The superhero who...
I don't know. I wasn't in this.
There's an episode coming out of where we do dumb superpowers. And I propose that it's a guy who can imitate the powers or the abilities of any animal. But in order to do that, he has to eat their feces.
Ew, gross. But anyway, but as we go on, I'm going to try to marry up this metaphor more with the book, because I didn't think of it until today. So my thought isn't totally fleshed out. But based on what happens in the book, you could almost apply the superhero origin story to this book.
No, and I completely agree, because a lot of the people that are narrating and giving their recollections and experiences with Rant, they paint him, not all of them, but they definitely paint him as like this mythical, bigger than life person. Like everything he did was purposeful and important, and like he was something special, even though he didn't act that way.
Right. Or perhaps hero's not the right word, right? But a superpowered something whatever origins.
Right, like something extra human.
Right.
Some would say Jesus level, which gets implied at the end.
Oh, that's true.
It gets implied. Yeah,
there's that. There's that, but we haven't gotten to the end yet. So
yes, we can. Well, I mean, you do start at the end.
True.
Or the start, depending on how you define time travel.
I don't want to derail Rantcast, but I was super disappointed that John did not die and, in fact, die at the end.
Well, okay. That's the point of the book.
I read that and saw it. Rather okay. Good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that movie quite a bit.
Okay. But anyway, sorry. I was going to say, so Rant, we follows young Rant Casey as he's growing up in this podunk. Bumfuck nowhere town. With his parents. His dad apparently is kind of not great. His mom apparently is just like...
How do you define dad is an interesting question. And we can probably get to that.
We'll get there.
Because, yeah, that is a transition point, we can say.
Yeah. But his mom apparently is like... How do they do...
She is the most... There are basically two defining character traits for her. She makes people eat slow because she puts shit in food so that way people break their teeth if they have an oopsies.
That's true.
Which is still the most fucked up thing.
Yeah, she puts hard stuff like nails and things in food so that, like, if you're eating her food, you have to take your time because otherwise, yes, you risk severely injuring yourself.
Right, and she's also a teen mother. So she got a baby doll when she was still a girl, right? And basically treated Rant kind of like that.
Yep. Embroiders all of his clothes. Yep.
You know, it's both her only mode of self-expression and also her...
Other than the Easter egg.
...really laying claim to her child.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then Rant immediately drops off all the embroidery stuff because...
Yeah. Yeah,
that's teenagers for you.
Yes.
Faux show.
But never lets mom see.
Yeah. No,
mom still thinks he's wearing all the embroidered stuff.
My favorite quote was that Rant would be happy to wear it, but they wouldn't if they made fun of him. But if they made fun of his mom, that's when he would get pissed off.
Yeah.
And that's just a little fun thing.
Because like, Rant very much is a person who is very comfortable with who he and what he is and really just does not care what anyone else thinks.
Yeah. That is the vibe everything gives off of him.
Right.
Which is why...
questions. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, but it just lays more into that whole Messiah type thing of like, he's just going about doing his thing and it doesn't matter what everybody else thinks or says. He's just doing his thing.
People are affected by Rant. Rant isn't affected by anyone else except for when, you know, car crashes.
And rabies.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I just wonder, based on what happens later in the book, how self-aware he is at this time. And whether there's a reason he is so precious with his mother.
There is an implied with how he gets his money. That's true. So there is some level of self-awareness, I think.
Right. So yeah, that's true. That was something that also just occurred to me.
Yeah, for the record, I don't know how to... Rant bought people's teeth with gold coins that he managed to casually get from a bunch of people. Legally, but then got like bajillions of dollars.
Yeah, when he was young, he managed, they started a whole, he got a bunch of young kids together and they started a tooth fairy racket where they would take teeth and put them under their pillows to get money from their parents. And then when the parents caught on, they started.
Beautiful quote about belief and understanding.
Yeah.
And, yes.
Yeah.
But
yes, and I didn't mark it, unfortunately, but it was really great.
Yeah. But then sometime after that, he started like doing a...
All right. Are you ready for the quote?
Yes.
Yes.
From man to animal to fairy, from toys to candy to money, thus, interestingly enough, transferring magic of faith and trust from sparkling fairies to clumsy tarnished coins, from gossamer wings to nickels, dimes, and quarters. In a way, a child has stepped up to far greater feats of imagination and faith as he or she matures, beginning with Santa in infancy and ending with the tooth fairy as a child acquires adult teeth. Or plainly put, beginning with all the possibilities of childhood and ending with the absolute trust in the national currency.
Right. So, very briefly, sidetrack, Terry Pratchett covers something similar in the book Hogfather.
I need to read Terry Pratchett's stuff.
Yeah, and say, I don't want to get too into it because that's not the book we're talking about. Yep. But in Hogfather, he talks about something similar about how we need, humans need belief for things. And it's actually very, very profound in this comedic book.
And that whole theory or feeling of belief and through belief becoming empowered pays off in the third act of the book. Very strongly, yeah. You know, ends up leading to what happens there. So Rant has all sorts of, as a young child, has all these interesting things that happen, and just, he's very obviously not a quote unquote normal kid, right? Not a bad kid, not a troublemaker per se, but just not.
He certainly did not have high academic interests. I think that is a fair thing.
Yeah.
Not a troublemaker.
Well, I mean,
except for the one time he put eyeballs in like hearts.
Yes, when he went and got the like actual body parts from like an abattoir.
No, he grabbed it from a butchery. He was like, "Oh, can I have some pig hearts and some eyeballs and stuff?"
Okay, butchery, abattoir. It's more or less the same thing. Yes, and the local church was putting on the haunted house. And so where you turn off the lights and you have like all the foodstuffs that tell you where these things, except he swapped out all the foodstuffs for the real thing and freaked everybody out. And wasn't there the, and then there was the Thanksgiving where like everybody got poisoned.
I believe people just got sick from the touching all the stuff
No, I'm pretty sure there was a Thanksgiving dinner where like a whole bunch of older people in his family got sick and died. And it's implied, it's not said, but I think it's implied that somehow Rant intentionally or unintentionally tainted the dinner, the food.
Well, is that the first time he got rabies and passed it on?
It might be, but I don't think it was rabies that killed him.
I don't remember.
Yeah, rabies is a reoccurring theme in this book. Mm-hmm. And like, I knew I was in for something that I was not fully prepared for mentally when I read the line by one of his paramours. Was like, I'm not sure which one of the times that Rant gave me rabies, meaning that he has infected this person multiple times with rabies.
Mm-hmm.
I was not prepared for that.
Right, which is a commentary on how there's nothing to do in a small town, so you keep letting things happen. And also by Rant's force of personality or his specialness.
Right. And when you say force of personality, not that he has a forceful personality. He's not manipulating. He's not Jim Jonesing anybody. It's just through the magnetic pull of who he is.
Rant is a very emotional person. Like, he's emotionally sensitive. He can read people very well. He knows how to sweet talk people. That is his thing. And because of that, everyone just likes him. Because he's an outwardly nice guy, and he's going to ask you to put your arm in a snake hole, or just a random hole, and see what bites you.
And you're probably going to do it.
Yeah. It's his way of testing people.
Yeah, or if you're a girl that he's sweet on, he's going to want to kiss you and, among other things, and give you rabies. And then you're probably going to, after you've a round of shots, you're going to come back and let him do it again.
All right.
because you think it's not going to happen again, right? It was just some weirdness.
It was nice and tingly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I would like to talk about the coins.
Yeah, okay. Let's do that.
So at some point after the Tooth Fairy scam falls apart, Rant rounds up a bunch of kids in the community and gets them to start going around and collecting like junk, old cans, scrap metal, anything that they could take out to the recycling center and stuff. And people what ends up happening is, they're happy to like dig out through their garage, their lean-to, their outbuildings. But what you ends up happening is because this is a town in bumfuck wherever, where people born there, raised there, die there, and generations of people never leave. What it turns out,
accumulated crap.
Yes, but what it turns out is amongst all of these jars and coffee cans and where people, particularly probably a lot of it during the Depression and post-Depression initially, were hiding hordes of coins, old coins, gold coins, old is just because back when people, and especially, and this is still, at least when I was growing up, was still kind of a thing in the South where you would always have a stash of like old guaranteed money. Like banks fall and stuff, I had something I can fall back on. Well, somehow, which we find out later, Rant kind of has this premonition or this idea that all of this is out there. And so he has these kids out going and looking and finding. And so they just start bringing him jars and coffee cans of all of these old coins, some of them very old, very rare, very, very valuable. So much so that he accumulates like this vast fortune of rare coins and ends up causing a hyperinflation in his little community. Because all he's handing them out, and all these little kids are going to the candy store and the five and dime buying candy and stuff with coins that are worth hundreds of dollars,
hundreds of thousands.
Yeah. And so the shopkeepers are like suddenly like bringing in all the biggest sweets and toys and stuff to try to attract more of these kids.
Right. And this is another thing Rant doesn't say it, but his friend says it about him, is that like Holden Caulfield, he hates phonies, right?
I hate Holden Caulfield.
I know, but because he's a teenager, we don't like them. But anyway, but he does something very similar, which is by doing this, like the adults can't say, like the kids, when they spend the coins, are saying, I got it from the Tooth Fairy. You know, that's
they're not going to question. They're just going to accept it. And
they can't, because if they say, I don't believe you, then they're going to get into this whole thing about whether or not the Tooth Fairy is real. So they have to keep up the lie. So that's part of how this whole thing goes, is because the adults have to keep up the lie. So, but the other thing that I wanted to mention about the coins is I don't know that Rant had an intuition about these coins, as I think, now that we talk about it some more, he knew about them.
Yeah,
he did, because
but he couldn't go around and get them all himself.
Yeah, and because we find out in the third act how he knew.
Right.
I think we can admit that he is a historian. I think that is...
Okay, are you truly a historian if you're just recollecting stuff that you lived through?
you have
firsthand experience. I mean, look, if I watch a movie and then I rewind it and then I play the movie and then I sit there with people who have not seen the movie and I start commenting as if I haven't watched the movie, but yet I'm predicting and knowing everything about the movie, am I just a genius or am I just using rote memory? Spoilers, but that's kind of how I see this.
Well, and it depends on how you interpret some of the other characters in the book based on the evidence given to us in the text.
So we are nearly...
Which, when we get closer to the end, we can talk about that.
We are nearly 30 minutes in. I think we should begin phase two. Yes, part two, the city.
And party crashing.
Yes, party crashing, I think is fair to say. So Rant moves to the big city and he secretly has a bajillion dollars. And then he casually discovers what party crashing is, which is where a bunch of teens?
I don't think they're teens. They're driver age to about, I want to say, mid-20s.
Yeah. The youngs, where they are driving around crashing cars, just casually having fun.
Right. So that's how it's presented in this part, is that they just do it for a laugh.
Yeah.
Because another thing to bring up is, at this time in the city, the population is divided into two groups, the daytimers and the nighttimers.
By law. Yes. By law, they are divided.
I see you ask.
Because the daytimers are like the normal, respectable society that have jobs and have money in the normal way. Nighttimers are your service workers, your retail workers, your low-level bankers, your janitors, or yeah, people who work all night and have nowhere to go and nothing to do. So this is initially put forth as the kind of thing punk rock kids would have done in the 70s if they could have afforded cars.
Right, because your nighttimers are... The way it's set up is, by law, daytimers are not supposed to be out past sundown, and nighttimers are not supposed to be out past sunup. It's like a curfew. Yeah, it's basically a caste system.
Yeah.
And the...
Officially, it is matched. Both sides are even, but that's not how people treat it.
Right, because you can choose, as one of our people giving us, one of our narrators is discussing, their daughter chooses to become a nighttimer. And they're just like, all disappointed. And like you said, you're right, it's the punk people. It's the people that don't fit in a society. It's the people that are considered less than or just won't conform. They are the ones typically that end up as the nighttime people.
Yeah.
Right. And really quick, I wanted to bring up one of the characters that we meet in the nighttime, which is Green Taylor Sims.
Yes.
Cool. Very important, because when I first read his input, I'm like, is he a cop? Is he a government investigator?
The thing is,
he a researcher? Because his commentary is presented so differently. Go ahead.
Yeah, as his voice, as he speaks, he sounds different than everyone else. Everyone else has a more casual talk. He is more of an anthropologist talking about back in the day.
Yep, he is speaking from like almost like a
from a historical view, you would say. Because when you read his little tag, it says historian.
Sometimes.
Well, okay.
So, that's another thing I wanted to point out, is the tags aren't consistent.
So it actually is, from what I've gathered, it is consistent. It's just the tag shows up when the first time that they speak in the chapter.
Yeah. Okay, that's...
So then as they then speak later, they don't determine their title or their daytime, nighttime position.
Yeah.
By the way, you only learn about like the daytime, nighttime thing halfway through the second part.
Yeah.
When you're just reading it and you see like there's a little star thing or a little moon thing and you go, that's weird. Okay. Yeah,
it doesn't explain. And when you begin the book, like the very beginning is a bunch of people who knew Kant Rant were essentially in his social circle, traveling from the city, whatever city is, to breaking curfew and so forth, going to his old hometown to try to see his grave, to try to find out, you know, if all the stories that he told, what they can verify. And they have next to their name, Party Crashers. And you said you've got the thing, but we have no concept of what that is.
Yeah.
It's not until you get partway through the book. And that's another thing about this. And I'm sorry, I'm going to derail this for a minute. Okay, Party Crashers, daytime, nighttime, all the shit with Rant. Like, a typical author... Like, let's just say Stephen King would have taken any of one of these ideas and made a whole book around it. And this guy just like shoved things just like more and more. Here's a weird idea. Oh, here's another one. Here's another big concept. Here's something that's brilliant, but really fucked up. I'm going to put this all in here and just deal with it.
And we didn't even mention replaying like the ports on people's heads that just casually, they're like, and like, that's a fucking wild thing.
And that's another thing that's halfway through the book before they even explain what it is. They just casually mention it in the first chapter. Yeah. They run into the small town cop who's porting like all of these like TV and movie cops, which is, and it's just like, I have no idea what they're talking about.
So at first it sounds like they're just saying porting in a way to say like he's just kind of channeling that idea, right?
Yeah.
But later, if you think about it, porting and reliving things and being a different person also plays into the whole rest of the plot of the book.
That's fair. Yeah.
You know, and when that thing they say that Rant says, which is, when you're in a small place, you want to be, you stay because you want to bitch about it. No, it's, you leave the small town so you can wish you were still back home, and you don't leave home because you want to complain about never leaving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those porting videos are like a way to circumvent that or enforce it.
But for the uninitiated, porting is a little like socket that gets installed in the back of your head that lets you experience other things. Like, it plugs directly into your brain, and then it's like, okay, you're going to experience like a happy daytime of like a nice train trip. And you get all of the emotions behind it as well. And so in order to make the different videos, I guess you could describe them, more interesting, they get filtered multiple times. So you go like, we're going to filter this through a stoner, where we're now going to record the stoner's reaction to the train trip, and we make it a lot nicer, and we do all of those things associated with it. And yeah. There's a real fucked up thing with babies, and I don't, that one,
The feelies from Logan's Run, but plugged into your head and extra.
Yeah, and it's not, you're not having the full experience. Like, you're not having the memories necessarily. It's like you said, it's the emotions, it's the sensory input, it's the feel of it.
Yeah.
And so that's where, like, the true artists of the porting business, I guess, figure out how to filter and layer all of these different things to heighten certain parts, deaden certain parts, stretch out or enrich different feelings and things. And so it literally becomes an art form.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I was wrong. That's Brave New World, not Logan's Run, that has the feelies in it. Sorry about that. But anyway. Yeah, but that's a whole other like thing that goes into the plot.
And so rabies is a neurological disease. It travels up your nerves until it reaches your brain. And so that's what happens with people who get infected with rabies in this setting, is their ports eventually turn off. They no longer work all the way.
Which continues to happen to people in Grant's
vicinity. Yeah.
Because he is like this super carrier of rabies, and he doesn't, and like just being around him, he can essentially infect you.
He is I don't know how we're going to be able to skirt the rules, a sexual being. And so you get, rabies is an STD. I don't know if that's true or not, but it is
in this book. Yeah.
Yep.
I've got to bring it up. I'm sorry. I will try to do it the most tasteful way possible. Rant is either born with or gains this special ability.
I can read the exact quote.
Okay. Yeah. Please do it to where it says that. Right. That makes it more academic.
Yep. It'll take me a minute. But basically, as someone exits the time stream more and more, they gain more sensory power. And it is in what I can only describe as a bad scene involving Rant's mother. But
yeah.
You eventually do, he gain, you can eventually gain more sensory input. So that is what has happened with Rant, where he gains additional, more sensitivity.
Right.
Specifically in the ability to do some amazing things via one particular act.
Yeah.
Well, and it doesn't even have to be that act, I bet. I bet no. He could just...
He just does it normally, because we see it in the first part where he's sniffing blood products.
Yes.
Yeah.
Basically, essentially, he has such incredible sensory ability that through anyone's personal body fluids or chemistry, he can effectively tell what their physical being is, what they've eaten, what kind of emotional state they are in. Like, it's like ESP, essentially.
Yeah. Like a superpower, like I said earlier.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like a superpower. But yeah, that's some crazy stuff there. But yeah,
we're not able to find the quote. So Oh, well.
Oh, okay. That's fine. I mean, there's more to talk about, like his sort of girlfriend.
Echo Lawrence.
Oh, Echo?
Yeah, Echo Lawrence. So yeah. The thing about Echo that is interesting is that, again, you don't find out right away. And something I like about it is that initially she's just presented as Rant's love interest.
Yeah, she's a driver for the party.
Right. But you find out later that she's at least partially disabled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That she's been in a car accident as a child, which is part of why she's interested in party crashing. But that it stunted her growth on one side. She's got some difficulties that speaking I like how bit. You don't know at first. You just know that he likes her.
Yeah.
And that's really cool.
Well, a bit more than that. His dad shows up and says, go and find Echo.
Well, no, that's true.
Yeah.
There is that. But it seems he genuinely has an actual affection for her.
Yeah.
And I think it's a cool thing the author did to not describe her that way right away.
Now, you also skip out the part about, we skipped over the part where, as a boy, when he's at this town, that this weird, creepy old man shows up one day on his way to church.
Go to the city, go find Echo Lawrence.
And says, I'm your real dad, come to the city. Right?
Yes. And then when he tells his dad that he's going to go to the city to find the real dad, his dad tells him, well, you know who that old man was? That old man was your dad.
He's right. Your real dad.
Was your real dad. Which opens so many questions that eventually do get answered. But right. You're not going to like them.
Well, technically, his dad is his real dad, too. Yeah. I can get the full quote for you if you want.
Well, it depends on the timeline.
No. It actually is because he took a paternity test at one point for a DNA test, and they saw that his DNA is the exact same as his dad's.
Right. But so the big spoiler, right? Are we ready for the big spoiler?
Yeah. It has been suggested enough, I think.
Right. That Rant, that he is not the first incarnation of this person, right? So,
yeah.
And then we also find out that Green Taylor Sims is one of them. But so what we're looking at is the Chet Casey that raises Rant isn't the incarnation of the character who actually fathered Rant. It's it's Green Taylor Sims.
Yeah.
Who did fathering. Because Rant goes back in time and shows up and sees what happens to his mother and is too late to stop it. And ends up raising him.
Yes.
Rant was effectively... So long story short, Rant basically gains the ability to time travel and continues to go back in time and essentially sire himself or sire
you become your own father. My favorite thing is the grandfather paradox, which is the idea that if you go back in time and kill your grandfather, you don't get born. And so they're like, yes, that is true. Also,
if you become your own grandfather, then
you can exit time entirely.
Yes. Right.
And that brings me back around to the actual reason for party crashing. Is that there is a rumor, there's an urban legend that all or most of these party crashers know about, that if they crash in the right way, they too can exit the time stream.
They need to
It's not something that only Rant knows. It's an urban legend that they all know.
Yeah.
It's more specifically that you can exit time and you have to be infected with rabies. And it's just a random little tidbit, I swear, I think.
I don't remember that part.
Okay.
But I do remember. I mean, it might be there. Because I've only read it 1.25 times. So.
Yeah. The rabies comes into it. Rabies is a big part of this book.
Yeah.
You know, and I wonder if it has something to do with them being disconnected from the ability to do the
port? I think it has something to do with that, the neurological condition, but it's not just standard rabies. Like, this is like Uber rabies, because Rant becomes patient zero of a rabies pandemic.
Right.
That's why people care about him, is right. because he did all of the stuff. He
right.
he is the they say patient zero is not an acceptable term, but he is the patient zero.
Right. Well, because they don't want to set up that sort of mythology, right, about him, that he's patient zero, yeah. but he is. And that, again, is, again, part of his quote-unquote superpowers, right, is that he's been infected with it so many times that even if he had gotten the treatment, it probably wouldn't get rid of it. But it's part of what fuels his ability to do stuff.
Yeah.
He is like, he is the rabies equivalent of Typhoid Mary.
Yeah.
He's got turbo rabies.
Yes.
And I don't know if this is true or not, but the implication is that only nighttimers get rabies. I'm sure that daytimers did as well, but they're suggesting that all nighttimers have rabies.
Which is an allegory to the AIDS epidemic, yeah. particularly in the 80s, where right. it was like only homosexual. It was a homosexual disease that straight people yeah. didn't get it, which of course was entirely false. But that's yeah. exactly the stigma and how it was perpetuated.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I believe in the book, daytimers do start getting it. And that is one of the reasons they started having hit squads going around shooting people who violated curfew.
Yeah. And it became a fad for the teens, which is the funniest thing.
Yes, to either get rabies, or if you didn't have it, pretend you had rabies.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because that's what teenagers do. You know, they do dumb stuff.
They need a fight against the system, man. I'm going to become a night timer. Fuck you, mom and dad.
That's right. Yeah.
That whole thing is, that concept in and of itself is brilliant. Of just that struggle, that class warfare struggle between the two, and how it's set up. That it sounds ridiculous, but like just thinking about it, oh, we're just going to divide people by people that are awake during the day and people awake at night. Now that sounds insane. Like, how yeah. could that makes no sense? But it's presented in the book as such a normal, natural thing, with all the negatives about it, that it's plausible. Like, you buy it.
Right, because it's also partially built on the government study about traffic control.
Mm-hmm. Remember, which is what it ultimately comes down to. Yeah, a lot of it is you got the government on traffic control and the whole fucking party crashing. I'll be honest, the party crashing part of the book was the part I liked the least. That was the hardest really? Part for me to get through. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It wasn't until we got to the end of the party crashing stuff when all of the shit started to get explained. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm a small brain person. I didn't get what was this all about.
No, right? I didn't either. Don't worry about it. I didn't either. And then, because I first thought to myself, I got to that part where you start getting the answers. I'm like, oh, we've gotten to the Philip K. Dick part. So I don't know if you've read any of his books.
A little bit.
So like Dr. Blood Money and The Penultimate Truth and
yeah.
and even Man on the High Castle and all these other novels aside from Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep really talk about like perception and truth and gaslighting and mental illness.
And see, that's the other thing. You mentioned the gaslighting. You can't be sure that any of the things that we are told throughout the book, once you get to the end, they intentionally throw a lot of stuff at the end in that now you don't know how much of this was true, how much of this is both either gaslighting or neurological damage from all the crashing and the rabies and stuff. How much of this was real and how much of this is legend?
Or the car salesman who explained how you convince people to buy a car. How right. do you convince people to buy the story?
Right.
Is you build it up with these single, you know, with open-ended questions, single answer questions, blah, blah, blah. And if you look back through the book, there are a lot of instances where it seems like you're getting what might be the answer to a single answer question or what is an open question throughout the entire book. Which is brilliant, honestly.
Yeah, the book is brilliant. The subject matter at times is cringy, which is why I said it before when we were the whichever episode that we talked about it. Like, this is a book you either need to listen to in audio buds with noise dampening so that no one else can hear it, or that you read like on an iPad, or no, read it on like a paperback in a closet locked in your room. And then when you're done, as you finish pages, rip them out and burn them so that no one can know what you've read.
So here's the thing.
Go ahead, Jake.
Yeah, the thing is, the cover of the book is actually pretty nice and normal. It's a nice, like, beautiful picture of a neuron.
It looks like an anatomy journal.
Yeah, and it's very nice. You've got, like, a background. Like, it's very tasteful. You've got a nice, like, half page as well up in the front. It is a very tasteful book from the outside. And then you flip through and you're like, oh, did you know syphilis tastes like sour cream and onion? And you're like, oh God, what?
Right. Yes. This is exactly the kind of thing. Like, I started reading this in the airport on my iPad. And I'm sitting there, like, I got up and moved to a different seat where I had like a wall to my back so no one could look over my shoulder. Because I didn't want them to think like I was some like weird sicko for some of the stuff that I was on the page.
So anyone who sees Chuck Palahniuk's name on the book you're reading, they're going to think you're a weirdo. It doesn't matter which one of them you're reading. Because if they know who it is, they know it's weird.
The thing is with Chuck Palahniuk is people only know him for Fight Club. And like, that's it.
Or Joke.
Yeah. And that nobody reads the books. They just know there's a movie.
Yes.
So you can admit, like, oh, no, this is a movie author. Like, it's got, and then you can, it's able to be smooth through on the outside. You just don't open it. That's the
difference. I just think it's funny that you guys think it's that weird. I mean, just based on the other stuff that I've read, I just put it down to Halion's sweet, innocent Southern boy thing he's got going on over here.
What?
You just hadn't been exposed.
That doesn't sound like literature. Me.
Because I've not been exposed to weird published material. I have heard of Mario Erotica. Don't worry. Like,
but if you want to talk about weird in the way this is weird, you're gonna like read stuff like J.G. Ballard or Thomas Pynchon or who's the one, or Kafka.
Yeah,
you know, with the metamorphosis and all that.
We just turn into a bug.
Or Brazil. You know, or like Brazil.
I need to watch that movie.
What's that?
I need to watch that movie. I've not sat
down. Yes, you do. It's amazing.
it's amazing and weird.
But like, so I read Clockwork Orange pretty young. I read Crash before I saw the movie. And then I found out, that song Warm Leatherette is about the book Crash. which I didn't realize till I read the book. So I guess I've just been exposed to more of it. So while it is gross and it is a little weird, it is not the weirdest thing I've ever read. Or the most disturbing. I would say Crash is the most disturbing thing I've ever read.
I come at it from like, it does tackle subject matter that, particularly in my upbringing, it's not like I haven't read similar things since, but it's just not my typical type book that I've read, which I've been branching out, you know, like I said the other day, I've spent, you know, I read a lot. I have used to read a lot. I generally had three or four books going. And then for like 10, 15 years, I hardly read at all. And over the last year and a half, I've gotten back into where I've got multiple books going right now. So it was just something, the different type, something that I had ever read before, as far as some of the subject matters in the way. But even if you're not into weird, even if you aren't into reading uncomfortable things, particularly that deal with certain subject matter that maybe is considered not mainstream or, you know, taboo, it is a brilliantly written book. You cannot deny that in any subject matter. And even though that internal monologue and internal voice in my head, that's the vestige of, you know, as you said, the young, innocent me, that was kind of like, oh my God, what is happening? What is this? That 20, even that couldn't stop me from reading it because it is such a brilliant book.
Oh, and by the way, I said sweet, not young.
So
go ahead, Jay.
You get away with that because you and I are almost the same age. But I'm not going to say that because that would be rude.
The first time that I read this, I actually needed some breaks. I was like, all right, I've got like 50 pages and I'm going to do something else for a while.
Oh, I put it down for like 2 months.
Yeah.
Before I 2 or 3 months before I picked it up again. I was like, all right, that's enough of that. I need some brain bleach. I'm going to go read a Clive Cussler novel because that will cleanse my brain palate.
Oh, man, you guys are adorable.
I've not had enough time to read all the books that I would like to read. That's my argument.
I'm just teasing you. It's completely fine. I mean, I have not read even half the books that I'd like to read. I have to work.
Yeah, right.
It's bullshit.
Work. Work is so annoying. But I do most of my best reading at work.
Yeah. I am still reading The Mountain Under the Sea. And that's really good.
Finished it today.
Oh, it's so good. I love that book.
I am so happy that you're enjoying that book.
Oh, yeah. It's really solid.
Awesome. No, I'm waiting for Alecto the Ninth to come out.
Let me just ping you with it.
Cool. But yeah, so one more thing I wanted to make sure that I brought up is that I wonder about the holiday table arrangements and generational stuff, and how this book sort of speaks to me as a Gen Xer, as
Gen X in the house.
Right, is that this our generation, I'm surprised we haven't picked up Party Crashing. Mm-hmm. Because it's almost like it's both, the habit is both tragic and hopeful at the same time, right? Is that things are so fucked up for them that they're willing to risk injury, maiming, and death to go back and be able to fix their lives.
Yeah.
Right? As a Gen X person.
To be the one on top of the boot rather than under.
Well, that also. Yeah. But to me, it's like our whole generation, instead of like, I wish I could go back to my younger self and go, don't give up that punk rock life. You know, because I was mad about everything, right? But then I had to work and pay bills, right? But I wish I could go back and say, keep being active, keep doing the things, keep your friends politically active, right? Because our world is shit, right?
Well,
for whatever reason, I don't want to get any further than that, right?
I never got to go through that phase because I went straight from like high school to getting married and having babies. So that whole period, like I missed out on that whole period. Like I'm, you know, as I approach 50, I'm living my best life now, like where doing more, like I'm finding all of that, like the teen, that teenage young 20s stuff, the life that you lived and stuff. That's what I'm doing now. But I get exactly what you're saying. Generations and the struggle between them and the juxtaposition of the fact that they are essentially parts of a food chain that are struggling against one another. And the only way the younger generation gets to be on top is to either A, wait till the older generation dies or takes them out. So that whole generational structure is a theme, running theme throughout this book.
Right. And also how Gen X pecked out.
I disagree.
Why am I not surprised that I would make a statement and Jay says, I disagree. Yeah.
So it's not generational because it's only one generation. That's the theme where it's you can't be upset at your dad if you are your dad.
Well, okay.
But it's still generation. It's like it's rant, but you got rant 1.0, rant 2.0, rant 3.0.
Right. And I don't just mean rant, though. I'm not just talking about that part. I'm talking about like the holiday table family arrangement is a generational mess, right? But also
until he kills a bunch of them.
Well, right. But the other people who aren't rant, who are part of the story.
Oh, yeah.
Are part of that generational problem where they're like,
to me, that was more of a class.
My life is so terrible. I'm willing to risk death and dismemberment to be able to change it.
To me, that was more of a class struggle rather than a generational because of the daytime, nighttime. Because it was in theory, you can have old night timers. They don't typically exist, but there's no reason why you can't have it. You can have young daytimers. There was an entire class of kids. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's just more of you have the rich folk and the poor folk, and the poor folk are willing to give up everything to become rich.
Yeah. It's a class warfare.
Yeah, I can see that too.
Yeah. Yeah. That was much more clear to me than the generational stuff.
Well, I think it's telling the same thing, the generational thing, the class warfare. It's the same idea.
Yeah, I agree on that. It is very like coin flip of both sides of the same coin or two sides of the same coin.
But yeah, I did want to make sure I touch on that before we were done.
So we've been going about an hour, but the thing that struck me the most about this book, beyond all the brilliance and the weirdness and whatever, is the fact that as you go along, you think you're reading one type of book in one story. And then you change to a chat and the book shifts, and now you're it's a different story and a different type of book. And then you get to another section, now it's a totally different story. And it's like, wait a minute, and then you get to the end and you realize that it's all the same story and it all makes sense and feeds back into each other. And you're just like, what the fuck did I just read?
Yeah.
It's like, I can't think of a name for a book to compare the first section to, but the second section suddenly makes me think of The Great Gatsby. And the third, because it's towns and class struggle and blah, dystopian. Blah, blah.
Yeah.
And the third section is like, I don't know, pick your favorite Philip K. Dick novel and you can probably apply it. Paycheck, whichever book the movie Paycheck was based off of, because he goes back in time and fixes his own problem. But it is a way you could describe it, that it starts as one, turns into dystopian Gatsby, and then becomes Paycheck.
I don't think we
messed up Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Well, yeah.
Don't forget your towel.
There's not enough towels in the world to clean up that mess.
Yeah.
You don't want to touch the towels, more importantly.
I don't think you definitely don't want to be touching Rant's towels, of his towels. I don't think we've done a remotely adequate way of explaining what this book is about, because I don't think you can. Like,
we might have to do a part two later.
Yeah, I mean, I really do think this is, I mean, we can describe and explain parts of the book. We can explain the gist of it, but I don't think you can explain the book.
We haven't even mentioned the DRV radiographic traffic reports.
No,
we did not.
Right. So we could do a whole like hour just about those. So I propose that at some time in the future, we do a part two and we'll plan a little more ahead about what sections we want to talk about so that we have some more in there.
I would propose if we do a part two, we bring in someone who is new. Who just read it, or even better, someone who hasn't read it, but has only listened to this episode and has questions.
Halion, you want to infect people with Rant. That's what you're telling me.
Hey, like rabies.
It is better than rabies.
Yeah.
Which is an excellent Skinny Puppy album, by the way. Sorry.
So, okay. We have come up on an hour. To end this off, would you recommend reading Rant?
Yes.
It depends on the person. Most of the people that I know, definitely all of the people that I'm related to, hell no. Once I would have to know someone well enough to get a pretty good sense of whether or not I think they could handle it. Because this is definitely, I think, that if you just take like your average person, like your average normie is probably not going to finish this book. They're going to put it down before they get about a third way through. The average normie. Now, that is my perception of it.
I don't know. Based on the popularity of Squid Game, I don't think your idea of normie is actually what normal people are. I think you'd be surprised at how many people would read
but
this.
That is a sanitized mystery puzzle TV show wrapped around an easily consumable streaming service, you can't make Rant into a movie or a TV show. I don't think you could. You do
voiceovers. That's what you do.
Well, and also apparently James Franco optioned it in 2014.
Well, that's not going to happen.
No, because I think he's half canceled or something because he's a terrible person. But I'm just saying that someone did
allegedly, allegedly for our lawyers.
I don't know the story. I haven't. Yeah. It's only like a half memory because I don't pay attention to entertainment news. But anyway, I think it could be made into a movie and it would be really interesting.
I think it would be better as a mini series.
David Fincher, I think, would make a fantastic. He did Fight Club. I think he'd make
pull the taffy on it. Give us the whole thing, all voiceovers, almost zero direct dialogue. I think it works better that way. If we get all the dialogue, but we never hear Rant's voice, like they could even show him speaking and talking, but the sound, the dialogue we're getting is of the voice of the person who's right. So we never hear him. So that you were left at the end with the impression of, was this real?
You're asking for a Werner Herzog movie.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh man, that would be great too. That would be great too. Or Terry Gilliam. Sadly, that could not probably be a thing.
Unless he's a historian.
Right.
So okay, and for me to finish off, yeah, just read Rant. Just have a good time. And if you like Rant, you can be a friend. That's the friend metric.
Right. That is one of the friend metrics. I agree.
Yeah. I can see this. Yeah, this is on his looking for friend, aka must like Rant.
Oh, what's your favorite book? It's Rant. It's really good. You should read it. And if they come back,
best friends.
Yeah. They're like, fuck you and thank you.
I'd be a little wary if they told me it was their favorite.
Yeah, that might speak to. I just love the starts where he kept giving people rabies.
I'd be like, whoa.
Yeah.
But anyway, no, it was a pleasure talking about this book with you guys.
Yeah. And oh, yes. This was fun.
I look forward to invading your podcast again in the future if you let me. It was a good time.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. Love to have you back. Yeah.
Excellent.
So, this has been The Ox Unplugged. Goodbye, everybody.
If I had a time machine, I could go back in time and tell myself not to listen to that.